You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Stay tuned. This is Jessica Rush.
And Kara Cooper.
And you're listening to Mama's Talkin' Loud. Our next guest is Celia Keenan-Bolger.
Talking with Celia Keenan-Bolger. You may know her from so many things. 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, Les Mis, Peter and the Starcatcher, Glass Menagerie, To Kill a Mockingbird. And basically, anytime this woman steps on stage, she gets a Tony nomination.
Basically.
She won. But what you might not know about Celia is that she's an incredible social activist. And she was recently awarded the Michael Friedman Award from the ACLU. It's such a tongue twister. So we're going to talk a little bit about everything, but basically we're not worthy. So thank you so much.
Oh my gosh,
for being
you
here.
Are worthy. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you, friend.
Are you kidding?
Okay. Well, to kick it off, William is
4
and he started pre-K, right? How's Correct. That going?
It's funny. I think before I had a kid, I was like, I'm just not going to really be the kind of mom. I feel like I had so many ideas about the kind of parent I would be, and I certainly never imagined being a parent that would have anxiety around my child going to school or anything, or even like dropping him off at school. And I... just like one of the many ways that you're like, mom, it turns out that's different than what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I do think, it started, I guess, 2 weeks ago. And I was like, God, I'm feeling anxious. Like, what is that about? I was like, it's because it's William's first week of school. And there's just no way to really understand what that's all about, except that you take on. And, you know, he was doing great. He wasn't even having a hard time. But there is just that space in your brain that's like, how is everybody doing? How are we all doing?
Totally.
That I feel like you can't really shut off.
It's so hard. And it's not even, for me, I know it's not even intellectual. It's like a physical response.
Completely.
Like my kids went off to school and I found myself heart racing around the house. And my husband was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know. But it just manifests in really different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's something about those big transitions, it's made me think a lot about transitions in our life, like the fact that we're actors and that we are so used to transition and being resilient, and that unlike most professions, like we are constantly moving from one thing to another, and how we've built up like really good muscles to do that, but how most of the world does not really have to do that and doesn't really like it, including my four-year-old son. He's like, I'm not really into a transition. And what that, how it's like sort of reflected back at me, how lucky I am, even though there's so much instability in what we do, that I'm like, oh, but I actually am pretty good at bouncing from one thing to another.
With change.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that I really hope that that's something that I can build in him. I mean, I think unfortunately, it's like he doesn't have a choice.
It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it's so interesting because for us, a lot of changes occur because of our career, but for him, his life will remain pretty constant, the story of his life. You know, he'll still go to school, and unless you move or something large happens in his world, then his world will be very consistent.
Right.
And he won't have that access to change as much as we do.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see.
I think sometimes, you know, when this job ends, I'm about to finish on November 3rd, and I'm like, what will that be for our family? Like, usually with me and John, we'd be like, woohoo, now I can go out to dinner again. But I was like, oh, that's like a transition inside of stability. It's like, well, also why I think school actually is so good. And the summers where I feel like I remember being like, yes, the summer's here. And he was like, I am not that into the summer when it starts. I miss school. I was like, who is this child? He's like, I miss my friends. I miss my teacher. And I was like, of all the things I've been planning for, you being sad school was over was not one of them.
Exactly. Right.
Well, I think part of that too, he's still so young and the structure is still such
completely.
An important part of his growth, that probably is part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, maybe only a year makes a difference because my child was all about the summer. Elliot
She's ready
was
to
like,
go.
Woohoo, no more school. Let's go do all the things. And we lived it up. So, you know, maybe a year away.
That's right.
And then it'll be a whole new world.
But each kid is different, you know, like that might just be who he is, right?
Yes.
Geared towards
and
structure.
Foster and, that and and help it to grow and say, you can be an engineer.
You can be a doctor. It's funny that you touched on kind of that transition is such a part of our life. I think that that is one of the skills that being a person in the theater who then becomes a mom that is incredibly useful. Like you kind of already have that talent to like, oh, this isn't working. Okay, let's change it up. Or I have to go get a job because I didn't get that Broadway gig. So I need to, you know, make ends meet. There's like a problem solving nature to what we do that's kind of innately in us. And I think that that helped, certainly helped me when I became a mom. Just be like, okay, we're going to figure this out.
Yes.
You know?
I feel like we have better tools than most.
Yeah, slightly. I mean, there's plenty of other things I struggle with.
Correct. Same over here.
Well, speaking of To Kill a Mockingbird and how, and you're you will be gone.
Yeah.
The show's not closing, but you're going to end your run, which you were so incredible. And I texted that to you after
Thank
I saw you.
You,
but you are stunning in that and so deserving, more than deserving of the Tony that you got for playing Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird. You're transcendent. Like your performance was heartbreaking and heartwarming, and I was just so lucky. I was so lucky that I'm your friend. I was such a proud friend. It was one of those moments where it's like, oh my God, I'm that person's friend. But also like I'm super jelly because. But it's just so amazing. But how has it been? Can you speak to us a little bit about telling the story in the time that we're living in right now? And how that's affected you or hasn't, and what it's meant for you on the journey of bringing Scout to life.
This experience, I have a feeling when I look back on this time doing To Kill a Mockingbird, I'm going to be like, how did I do that? Mm. And of course, when you're in the middle of it, you're like, this is just what we do. And I think one of the things that has been so gratifying about it is that in these sort of chaotic times, it feels hard to know where to put our energy. And for me, like, I don't have quite enough energy to be fighting the good fight all the time or consuming all of the news that I should be consuming or, like, out in the streets. Or, and that, without sounding too precious, I do feel like performing in this play is a tiny act of resistance. And also, a sort of unifier that I think what's so incredible about the book and also about Aaron's adaptation is that it actually sort of, I think it extends this hope and maybe even like call to arms that we engage with one another and are decent and are seeing. There's that line that's like, you know, you can never really understand a person unless you walk around in his skin. And that I think being with 1,400 people every night, some of whom I know did not vote for Hillary Clinton, and who are experiencing the play very similarly to the people who did. And there aren't that many spaces, I think, maybe outside of church, for a lot of people from different backgrounds to come together and process these really big questions about what's happening in our country right now and where we have come from and where we're trying to go. And so that part of performing the play has been so deeply meaningful to me, and to sort of be the little conduit between the audience and the play, and to sort of try to take everybody through that. On the flip side of that, I have also felt just so depleted, both by the events in our nation and by the rigors of being the sort of motor of this play. And so there have been times within that I've felt like, I just don't know where this is going to come from. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I remember reading, there's this really amazing commencement speech that Nora Ephron gave in 1996, a very long time ago. And she says something where she's like, look, you can have it all, but I'm here to tell you it's going to be so hard. So don't ever say that nobody said it was going to be hard. And I feel like I have just held that in my heart, where I was like, if I zoomed out to being a young woman growing up in Detroit, and I knew that I was going to have a family, and that I was going to be the lead in a Broadway play that I cared about, and that I was going to win the biggest award that I could, that was available, like, I wouldn't have believed my life. But I also think what I couldn't have told that little person is, like, you will suffer for it. Mm. It will require so much of you, and you will feel deficient at every turn. Mm. And I think that is the sort of the working mother, particularly the working mother on Broadway. I think for so long it was like, just don't talk about it. Like, I'm like standing on the shoulders of so many women who just like shut up and did it. And I'm so grateful to people like Audra and Kelly who are Audra McDonald, Kelly O'Hara, Broadway, you know who we're talking about, that they were like visible with their, both their struggles and just their motherhood, that they were like, we are mothers and we are here. And that I feel like they sort of opened the door for the rest of us, as did all of these other women from previous generations who just worked their asses off and never said a thing about it, for us to be able to say, like, we're doing it, and also it's incredible, and also it is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm.
Here. Thank you. There it all is. Yeah. I mean, it is incredibly difficult. You're like, I'm all verklempt over here listening to you say that, because it's such, when you become a mother, it takes over your world. And no one, I was telling someone this the other day, no one can prepare you. You think you're prepared. You have no idea how your heart breaks into a million pieces over and over and over, and trying to find the balance. And I can imagine the exhaustion that you feel. Like, I know how I feel when I'm doing 8 shows a week and I'm not carrying To Kill a Mockingbird on my shoulders, you know? And like, so when you wake up at 6:30 in the morning and you get William to school, and like, you do your whole day, and then at 6:30 at night, 12 hours later, you say, all right, buddy, see you tomorrow. And then you go, and then you have to do your job.
Yeah.
Your job. And all these people who have paid all the money, mm-hmm. and all the things, and they're relying on you, and there is so much pressure in that. And I think, you know, for a long time, there really weren't many mothers in our business at all.
Right.
It was either you have kids and you leave the business, mm-hmm. or you decide, I'm not going to have children, that's the sacrifice I'm going to make. If that is, for some, it's not a sacrifice, but
yeah.
And so it's such an interesting time we're in now that I feel like there are so many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's empowering, and it feels amazing to know that we have this community and that we can speak up and stand up and say, we are here, our families matter. You know, all those dads who've been working for years,
mm-hmm.
those, it wasn't a big deal, you know, it's like, but it's like, we are here, and times they've got to change a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's also, it's that, it's hard when you're living your dream mm-hmm. that you feel like there's no space for me to be cranky or for me to be exhausted, or that, you know, I will say, like, in my head, I'm like, you know, it's not a musical. Like, it could be a musical. That would be even worse. Why are you so tired? And that we sort of tell these stories to ourselves that are like, you know, you should just be grateful, because the truth is, I am, but it two things can exist at once.
Yes.
And that I think it's hard sometimes, especially, you know, in our community, that nobody ever wants to complain about having a job. And yet, I think I am making peace with the fact that, you know, again, like, both things can be true. You can be grateful to have
absolutely.
A job, and you can also be mm-hmm. dog-ass tired.
Yes.
Well, and I think feeling free enough to say it is half the battle, right? It's not living like so many women did for so long, not talking about how hard it was, just putting
right.
their nose to the grindstone, maybe hiding the fact that they were mothers. You know,
mm-hmm.
whatever it was that, whatever it took for them to be successful or to survive. And there's a lot of freedom in being able to talk about how hard it is.
Yeah.
In saying that, what are your coping mechanisms? Like, what is it that you do when you are, you know, in the dregs and feeling like, how can I possibly either do the show tonight or sometimes take care of my child? Like, this is so hard. I've got nothing left in the tank. You know, what is it that you do to help yourself?
I mean, therapy.
I
feel like, I think what my the thing that I carry with me that I'm still, it will be life's work, but that this idea that I'm not accomplishing all of the things in the way that I want to accomplish them, that I feel deficient as a mother, I feel deficient as an actor, that I'm just like, I could, if I just had a little more space or a little more time, I could have more energy, I could be, you know. And I think changing your brain and saying, this is what I have, and that the punishment around that only leads to suffering, and that I'm doing the best that I can, and that I have to leave it there. So that's like a huge part. I remember I go to acupuncture. There's an amazing place on 31st Street that takes our insurance. And my acupuncturist was like, look, you only have 100% of yourself. Like, you don't have 110, you don't have 120. So you have a percentage that's going to work, and you have a percentage that's going to your family, and there has to be a percentage that goes to you. And I think, unfortunately, what ends up happening is that it feels selfish to take the time away from your work and your family, because both of those things get so much of your attention, but also you're constantly feeling like they don't get quite enough of your attention. So that there's just not enough left for you. And it's like so cliched, but that thing about the oxygen mask is so real, that it's like, if you don't have that mask on, nobody's getting saved. Nobody's getting the help they
right,
need.
Exactly. Well, I think I find when I'm on a show schedule, it's like any extra time I have, I want to be available to Elliot and to Eric, to my husband. I want to be available to my family to spend time with them, because I know I'm not there for dinner and bedtime and bath time. And so, but then that little extra time that I have would be the time I could do self-care or
mm-hmm.
go to the gym or work out. And so I do find, and I'm sure we all struggle with this, that you put yourself on the back burner unless you make a very conscious effort to say, I have to do this.
Yeah.
I have to take this hour to myself. But that is hard.
It is.
So
and
hard.
It's always changing. I think that's what's also hard. It's like what used to work for me at the beginning of the run, halfway through, like, stopped working. Where I was like, I can't exercise the way that I used to because I'm so fucking tired.
Mm-hmm.
And exercising for the first time has, like, only made me
more
exhausted. So I was like, okay, now I have to cut that out and figure out, like, a different kind of, just like the old lady in restorative yoga, like living my best life.
Whatever.
Trying
works.
To restore my body and, like, get some naps or something.
Just gonna hang out in Savasana.
Correct.
Class, right? Exactly.
And that, like, seeing friends for a long time was, like, a huge form of self-care. And then halfway through the run, three quarters of the way through the run, I was like, I need to just shut up and read a book and lie in a bed. But it's so hard until you sort of get to a breaking point, I think, to make those decisions for yourself. Like, and I think I'm pretty good at listening to my body and listening to myself, but I, along this year, I have lost track of myself, and that I feel like it has been harder and harder to receive the cues that are just like what you actually need is to like have almost nothing going on during your day, and like go to therapy, go to acupuncture, do a little bit of exercise, take your like wake up with your child, take him to school, and then like see what the day brings. Like get outside, always get outside, even if it's bad. But you know, that has been a really interesting thing this year.
I think what you touched on too in the mental state of it all is that knowing we place such super high expectations on ourselves, and being able to lower that bar a little bit and know that not everything is going to be exactly as we hoped or predicted or expected. I think you were talking about all the things of self-care, going to the gym, all that. And those are all things that I do, but I find the biggest thing that I have to do is literally just say, it's okay. Like, okay, so you forgot to send in this paper with Elin to school today, or you didn't have the time to make that phone call. Like, I'm one of those people that at the end of the day takes stock of everything I have or have not accomplished. And for me, like just hearing you say that, it's okay. It's okay to be like, okay, I can do that tomorrow, mm-hmm. you know, and that's all right. Instead of going to bed and being like, okay, didn't do all those things that I meant right. to do today.
And I think like part of my initial extreme discomfort in motherhood was that I was such part of my identity was being a productive person, that I valued my productivity. And that those first 6 months where I was like, all I'm doing is keeping this baby alive, and I'm like kind of bored and also kind of sad and in mourning for my life and not productive at all.
And yet the most productive keeping yep. a human alive.
Yes. Like, and that huge shift, I think, like your worth is not based on your productivity, especially as a mother. It's like, it's just, it cannot be about that because you will run yourself into the ground. And I think sort of, I mean, again, life's work, friends, life's mm-hmm. work. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, instead of the ticker tape at the end of the day going through like all of the have-nots and like what I didn't accomplish, it's just like, and I've even taken now to being like, if I mail a letter of saying to myself, like, good work. Like, that was yeah. something you did today.
Cross it off the list,
absolutely.
Honey.
Yes, and that it's like, and like, that positive encouragement can try to sort of balance out the negative thoughts that are coming in and out of, like, why isn't this getting done? Why isn't this getting done? Why isn't this getting done?
For sure. Mm-hmm. I do find when I'm being creative that I'm able to let that stuff fall by the wayside mm-hmm. a little bit more because I have that outlet to feel productive and feel like I'm putting something out in the world, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
And I find when I'm not working on something that I get really tied up in the minutia mm-hmm. of everything, because that's where I find my self-worth.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, and the good news is there is an end date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's something that's really lovely. Unless you're in, you know, a long-running government show, basically. You know, it's like, you know, there will come a time where this is over and yeah. you will have some time again and hopefully have a moment to, you know, a few weeks or whatever,
yeah.
or months to just breathe and live life and find yourself again.
Yeah.
Because I know that is so important.
It is. That recharging the batteries, I feel like it's so, I've never been so good of like not knowing what the next job is. And I feel like one of the amazing things that Tony Award did was like get me a lot of job offers in the theater. And in my guts, I was like, I can't do another theater job for 6 months.
Good for you.
And I mean, that's like a...
That's a huge thing, but good for you.
Well, and we'll see. You know, talk to me in January and I'm going to be like, you guys.
I usually make it 3 weeks and then I'm like, okay. Yeah. I'm ready now.
But it is, I mean, I think this one, I understand just like what it required and what it required of my family that I'm like, I need to like at least have 2 months where I'm not even auditioning, where I'm just like hanging out and being with my family so that the time comes again when I'm hungry. Because right now, I don't even have like the fire in my belly.
Yeah. You're like burnout. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard. And then there's that emotion too, the connection of when you're burnout and not hungry for the thing that drove you for so long.
Yes.
That you do, at least for myself, it's such a huge part of my identity. And it's like, what does that mean?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
What does that mean? Which is also terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And who am I now? Okay. If I'm not driving forward, wanting more of that, and
right.
I'm ready to just sort of hang for a second, and that's okay because the priorities have shifted, right?
Like yeah.
William is your priority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a mother, that is what happens. And yes, we love our husbands, and they're great, and their priorities too. But I find that, you know, especially our children are all relatively small, so
yeah,
they still are super vulnerable, and they're super, you know,
yeah, they
little
need us.
And they need.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I think also I had a moment sort of post-Tonys where I was so exhausted, and I had a real crisis because I was like, this is everything that you have sort of wanted, and if you want all of this, then this is what is required, like this level of output. And so what does that mean? Because I'm not capable of sustaining this. So what does that say about me as an artist? What does that say about me as an ambitious person? And I think that's when you can sort of zoom out and say, like, this is only for now. Like mm-hmm. this feeling of exhaustion or this feeling of whatever it is, like it will change. Like that, and that's another amazing and difficult thing about motherhood. It's like the only thing you can count on is that it's going to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like both over, inside over. Of your motherhood life and outside that, it, mm-hmm. you know, that that's going to,
yeah, for sure.
We're going to keep, you know, having to experience that.
And reinvent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of being a mother and just sort of with the show, we're sort of, you know, switch a little gear a bit and talk about your social activism, because it's something you touched on in your Tony speech, mm-hmm. talking about your upbringing mm-hmm. and your mom and what she instilled in you. And it sort of seems like it's, you know, part of your DNA, like who you are is a social activist in a lot of ways. And I know you feel very passionately about things and you march and you speak up. And could you speak to us a little bit about how becoming a mother has maybe shifted that or made it stronger or, where you're at with that.
I remember I read some study that was speaking to young women who were activists who were like much more powerful than myself, that their whole lives had been dedicated to activism. And every single one of them had mothers who brought them up with some thread of activism in their lives. And I was like, oh, that's why I am the way that I am, that it like I can trace it right back to my own mother. And it wasn't even so much about like different causes or, I mean, there were causes that we had growing up, but that there was engagement, And that I was dragged to all the protests that my poor son is being dragged to, and that we would go to boycotts and we would march in Labor Day parades, and we consumed a lot of culture and art that was sort of had a message. I mean, To Kill a Mockingbird was a really important book mm-hmm. in my house growing up. But I think then having a son, and particularly having a son, has been so interesting in these times of like talking about toxic masculinity. And I, in some ways, I actually think there are more tools about raising a girl right now. I feel there are things that I like will clock on the street that I'm like, oh, I'm glad I don't have a little girl to have to like explain that away. But I also think a huge part of what our problem as a society are the way that we raise our boys and the messages that boys receive. Mm-hmm. And just sort of societally and the mm-hmm. patriarchy. And that I think about that so much, of like the sensitivity of my son right now and like how open he is to the world, and how that's gonna just, how to preserve that and give him the tools to sort of hold on to that in a society that basically says like, this is wrong. You know, sensitivity equals weakness, and that anger and sort of like the fighting back is your only tool. And so honestly, that, I mean, I think he's going to be, you know, he understands now, I think, a lot about just showing up, whether or not that has any resonance of like where we're going. I mean, he's been to so many marches at this point. But like the other day, his babysitter picked him up from school, and they were making like rules for their class. And she was like, William, do you want to tell your mom what your rule was? And his rule was, we have to make sure to try to take care of everybody in the whole entire world. Oh. And I was like, okay, well,
he's,
you know,
getting
what?
It. Oh my
I
God.
Feel like they're on some level. Right. We're at least have oh. some building block, which I was like, this is oh. so sweet. And he also, I mean, this is another like sidebar. This was at the beginning of school last week, where he was like, I was like, you know, how are you feeling about going to school? And he was like, I feel left out at school. And I was like, in both ways, I was like, my heart, I've never been more proud that I have a child that can verbalize the feeling of being left out. And also my heart is breaking into a million pieces, that I was like, oh my God, welcome to the world, that terrible, terrible feeling. But I think, you know, it doesn't even have to be your own child, but I think engaging, like bringing kids into the fold, even if they're not, if it's like acts of service in a soup kitchen, if it's having a bake sale for separated families, if it's marching in a protest, like everybody has their different things. Like it doesn't all have to be the same thing. But just engaging them from the time that they're young, that has been the thing. It's not even really a choice. It feels like part of your responsibility as an adult. And I only have my parents to thank for that. Like, that was just how they operated. I was remembering that in Detroit, they didn't have recycling. Like, there was no curbside recycling. And so my parents would, like, collect recyclables in our garage, and then we would like haul them and sort them into like bags and like take them like 35 minutes away and like take them to the recycling center. Amazing. And I was like, at the time I was like, this is a pain in the ass, but I didn't see it as anything other than what it was. And like looking back, I was like, oh, that was a
big deal.
It was. Yeah. And it was like not convenient. Mm-hmm. And particularly since they had three kids, they had other things that they could have been dealing with. But they were like, we make this a priority. And so, right. you know, we can all just like choose those little things that we decide to engage with. And I really think that's the thing for me, because there's so much to fret about. But it also, it's like we don't have the luxury of being pessimistic mm-hmm. because we have kids. And so it's like, all right, what do I choose for my child and for my family that is important? And it can only be one thing, because sometimes it's too, you know, overwhelming to engage with all of it. But if you just choose one thing, and you as a family are like, and you know, we have like a little like, what are our family values? Like, we are a family who takes care of other people, who, and that sort of language mm-hmm. is, I think, also helpful in just trying to be like, I'm trying to raise a good citizen.
When you were talking about raising a boy, it hit me so hard. My little guy is going to be 3 in like a month. And he's so, like you said, just so open and so emotional. And I find myself trying not to say things like, this is not something to cry about, you know, because I'm trying to teach him that, you know, if you don't get the right color crayon, that is not something to cry about. But I don't want to instill in him a fear of being emotional. And it's fascinating because I have a girl and a boy, and women have a reputation for being emotional. My son is far more emotional than my daughter has ever been. Mm-hmm. And it's just fascinating. And I struggle with the same thing. Like, how can I keep you in this place where you are allowed to express how wonderful and exciting and difficult life is all at the same time?
Do you know what I always think to myself? Well, how would you treat him if he was a girl?
Yeah, that's a really good...
Because I'm like, I want a really strong, stand up for herself, like, fierce little girl who also is in touch with her feelings. And I was like, so just treat him like a girl.
That's wonderful advice, especially when he's asking... This is a silly story. It's a sidebar, which we may edit out later. he has this new Thomas the Train bike. And his thing is, he'll ride it down the street. He's like, Mom, my pretty, pretty dress is down there. Let's go get it. And he rides his bike all the way, and then he puts on his pretend pretty, pretty dress. And I'm like, you look great. And he's just so excited. And I don't want any kid in our neighborhood to say anything to him. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like my mama bear claws are going to come out in the most unattractive way if it happens, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and it's crazy, too, how things... Because I've been really aware, you know, with Elliot, she's a girl, and so raising her is a whole different ball game. But, like, I've noticed since she started, well, with pre-K last year and then kindergarten this year, she'll make comments about, well, that's not for boys or girls. And I'm like, wait, boys can't wear pink. I said, since when? I was like, anybody can wear any color they want to wear. It's just so interesting that they pick up on all these things because I literally didn't buy her anything pink for...
You didn't.
I didn't.
I was Cara there.
For like a solid year. I was very gender neutral, a lot of grays and things like this. And then all of a sudden one day, pink was her favorite color. I don't even know how it happened.
Yeah.
And now it's all pink. But it's interesting to see what just from, you know, their environment and who they're around and what they hear and what they start to pick up and how they'll say things and you want to squash it. You know, it's like, no, wait. Mm-hmm. Anyone can wear whatever they want. And, you know, because boys can't wear, she saw someone wearing a kilt. Boys can't wear a skirt. Well, yes,
Actually, they can.
Anyone can wear whatever they want to wear.
And so. We can't avoid those things. I mean, we cannot avoid our children going to school and picking up all kinds of messages that are different from, like, what our family...
Exactly.
You know? Mm-hmm. But that's also part of why I am so grateful for this community that we have, this, like, Broadway mother community, where I think we are all so different. And I think we probably even have... you know, different parenting philosophies, but I do feel like the inclusivity and the openness with which everybody engages and is supportive of one another is such a huge part of what has, like, supported me as a parent in these early years. And I think, you know, just posting questions, like when people are like, what do I do about this? The thoughtfulness of the answers and the way that we engage, I've been so moved by and not surprised, but it feels like such a home to have this space where we can go to each other and say, like, I am really struggling over here, or like, what do I do about this?
Mm-hmm. It's so funny you bring that up. I've had people ask me, as administrators of the group, they're like, is it hard? Do you have to, like, you know, step in a lot and shut people down, or, you know, turn comments off? And I say, never. Never have we ever had to do that. People behave with such kindness and mindfulness.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's not hard, you know, it's incredible. So
it runs itself, basically.
It does, which is awesome.
Which is amazing.
Do you feel okay talking about what happened at the theater?
Yeah, of course.
A couple months ago now.
Yeah, it was at the beginning of August, and it was it was the same weekend. So El Paso and then Dayton, those shootings happened. And then we went back to the show on a Tuesday. And we got through the entire show, and in my last monologue towards the end, there was like, it sounded like something was going on in Schubert Alley where I was, and that's not an uncommon occurrence, but there was suddenly like a lot of banging and screaming on the doors, and I was like, this sounds not right. And a bunch of people ran into the theater, I think through the box office, because it was so close to the end that the box office doors were open and ready to let everybody out of the theater, and ran into the theater screaming that there was a shooter in Times Square, which then of course made the audience panic. And it was like I don't even know how long I was on stage to sort of absorb all of it, but at a certain point we all ran off stage. And then there were like 3 minutes where we were just sort of waiting to figure out what was going on off stage. And then they were able to say like, it actually wasn't, there was no shooter, there was just a motorcycle that backfired. But I think probably it was a lot of tourists that were like, we're in the United States of America. And if I hear those noises, I assume that this is what's happening. And so we had like 10 more minutes to just be on lockdown, and then we didn't finish the show and we went home. And I think I was probably just sort of in shock. I didn't freak out. I didn't really know what to process, but I got home and like talked to my husband and then went to bed and then had to do a matinee the next Wednesday. And was very jittery on stage and just a little like, what's happening in the audience, like any flashlights or noises. I was just a little bit. And then we got to like 10 minutes before the end of the play, and I started feeling like I was gonna just burst into tears, where I was like, I don't wanna finish the show. I don't want to keep going on with this. And it was very, very difficult. And it happened again, you know, we had to do the show again Wednesday night, and it was really, really awful. And I think the truth is, like, we were at that point in the run where I was already pretty depleted. And then that event sort of wiped out my reserves, like what I was sort of depending on to get me through the end of the run. And the next 3 weeks, I experienced a sort of like PTSD and exhaustion unlike anything I have ever experienced before. And I think because I didn't like lose it at the event, and because the event actually ended up not being anything, it was very hard, I think, for our brains. The amazing thing is that every single one of, there's like only one moment in the play where the whole cast is on stage, and it happened in that moment. And I was like, somehow the universe like gave all of us the burden to bear so that we could like do it together, or try to process it together. And I will say the Actors Fund, I asked the producers if they would like do a group therapy session with us. And the Actors Fund came in for 3 weeks and did like group therapy with us. And it was unbelievably helpful. But on the second week post this event, I had a panic attack on stage, which I have never experienced before. I didn't even know it was a panic attack, but I was certain that I was going to pass out. And felt all of the feelings of like, I was like, I feel lightheaded, I feel like my heart is racing, and I feel like at any moment I am going to fall over on the Schubert Theater stage in the middle of this play, and they're gonna have to stop the show. And I had the desire to like run off stage, so to like get myself together. And then when it was all done, I was like, you know what I think that might have been, was not that I was gonna pass out, I think it was a panic attack. And that was sort of the turning point in this whole process, where I was like, I think maybe I have to start taking care of myself in a different way, which is just like trying to like replenish and only like do so little, and not be like the kind of mother that I really wanted to be. I couldn't be as present, you know, for him. It was the hardest thing I think I've ever gone through, certainly in the theater and maybe in my life. Like, it was as scary as anything I've ever experienced.
I can imagine. I mean, it was terrifying just to read about it. You know, people started posting on Facebook and hearing about people going backstage and getting into dressing rooms.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's, you know, I would say gun violence is, especially as a mother now, it is probably my most, the cause and that I am the most passionate about and terrified of. And, you know, you spoke at the beginning about William going to school and, you know, these are things that we have to think about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately now. But being on stage, you know, we are so vulnerable. We're up there. And I remember thinking about that years ago on tour and thinking, oh my God, if someone wanted to do something, I'm just standing here, you know? And but for us, you know, the theater is such a special holy place
for us.
It's our home. Like, it's where I feel most comfortable is on the stage. And so I can imagine that in that moment to have that happening and the fear from the people, you know, they've been giving you this energy all night long. And then for that energy to turn to, I mean, think about that, the energy that you're feeling from the 1400 people, the panic all coming at you on stage. I'm sure it was terrifying. And I commend you for going back the next day. I'm glad you've now like realized that this was something you needed to really address and take care of, because I probably would have taken a bit. I would have been, I don't know.
It was really, the thing that I feel so lucky, not just living in New York City, but also just having health insurance. I had so many resources. I had the Actors Fund. I had my own therapist. I had my acupuncturist. I went to a psychiatrist because I was like, I think I need something in case I start to feel like I have a panic attack again. And all of this was covered by insurance. I mean, my therapist is not in network, but I can submit so that I'm getting, you know, and I was like, I have all of these different resources available to me that are not costing me like, you know, thousands of dollars that you cannot, for me, I could not do it on my own. I needed outside help. I needed professional people to take me through like what was happening in my body.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And it's so brave to recognize that, you know, when we recognize that within ourselves, that we can't do it all. We cannot get through this moment in time without some help.
Ask for help.
Yeah. I mean, that is also, I think, a motherhood, like, as, and I think, I don't know if this is like women in general or human beings in general, that they're just like, I would rather just get it done. Like, that I, somehow asking for help is not, we're not hardwired for it. And when you become a mother, there is no other way to get shit done. And I think, like, opening myself up to that more and more, and how good it makes people who love us feel to be able to help us.
Yeah.
It, like, really, it goes both ways, you know? I don't think, it can feel really vulnerable to ask for help, but...
And it creates that village that everybody has spoken about for so many years, right? It takes a village to raise a family. And in the day and age that we live in, we don't necessarily live near our family. And that sense of community isn't necessarily, I think, inherently a part of our society anymore.
I agree.
And so you do have to ask for help. But I have found that once I do ask for help, there becomes this camaraderie and this sense of community where it isn't, you know, sometimes don't have to ask.
Yes.
People are more willing to offer it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels wonderful too.
Yes.
And then you can offer it back. And it's, you know, a give and take, which I appreciate. It's so funny when we were talking about the theater being your sacred space. And I know for me and the difficult things that I've been through, going to work has been my escape, has been my therapy, my place where I don't have to deal with whatever that is that's really troubling me. So for the troubling thing that happened to you to have happened in your sacred space, I cannot imagine what that was like to have to go back and relive it all the time. So kudos to you to
figuring
out. I will
say also, like, it has gotten totally easier, but it was very, very hard for like over a month.
Yeah.
It just felt not only vulnerable, but I think just... it felt like something had been disrupted, like something was like had been broken that would never ever be able to come back together. And the good news is that it did. You just have to sort of weather it out. But I think, you know, that time that you're inside of it, you're like, how? I mean, I think that's another thing that as a mother, it's so easy, like if William is going through a stage or if I'm at that point in the process of the show that I'm like, well, I guess this is my life now. And it's like, no,
it's not.
No, it's not.
It will change.
It's so true.
What, for you as a mother, as an artist, an actor, What's been the hardest struggle, and what has been the most pleasant surprise about becoming a mom?
I think the hardest part has been embracing this new identity. I think that there is a part of me that really, I would say it to people, I was like, when you have a kid, you just bring the kid along. Like, it's not like you become a different person. You just, like, you live your life. You're, like, you know, you are yourself. And then you just, you add the kid into the mix. And, like, you guys, as you know, that's not a thing.
Nope.
And I think that transition to understanding that about my body, about my time, about the way I approach my work, like, that old part of myself is gone. It's not even worth spending a lot of energy yearning for it. I mean, I think you can, it's okay to you know, sort through it, but I think figuring out how to go forward with this new life has been a very big challenge, one that I continue. I mean, I think initially it was, you know, that first year was sort of rocked my world, and not in a good way, guys. I was like, what have I done? But that I still have moments of that where I really, really miss my old life. And
It's a
I miss
very
my
real
marriage. Yeah. I miss my friends. I miss my freedom. I miss my independence. Mm-hmm. And then I think the surprise is how much more as a person I had to learn. That I feel like when I had William, I was like, I really got my shit together, guys. Like, I'm like a pretty high functioning lady. I got a great marriage. I got my friends. I got my career.
I'm nailing it.
Yeah. I'm feeling like really good. Yeah. And I like remember reading some quote or listening to someone speak, and I was like, oh no. And she said, like, the only purpose of the child is to teach the parents where they still need to grow. Oof. And I was
right.
Wow. But I think in a beautiful way, all of these things that were sort of lying dormant in my life that I was like, it's like not great. It's like not my favorite thing about myself, but, or about my marriage, or about, you know, whatever. But you know what? It's like fine. It doesn't really need attention. That having a kid has like really shined a light, both in myself and in my little outside world, of like where examination will be helpful. And I think even though it's painful, and even though it sometimes it doesn't feel good, ultimately, I don't want to lead an unexamined life, and that my child has like really brought that forth in a way that I never could have done without him, and that is, it's certainly made me a better artist. It's made me, I think, a more compassionate person, and I wouldn't have been able to do it without being a mother.
Well, that's solid.
Yep. That pretty much sums
well
it up.
Done.
Yeah, right?
That's
self-reflection, I feel like. I saw something recently about the postpartum years and how it isn't actually just when you have a newborn, right? Mm. And that during those years, you are being broken apart in lots of different ways, right? You're physically, you're being broken apart emotionally, intellectually. And that over that time, as your kid gets older, and I would say that, like, my older kid, I'm kind of at that point with her now, you are put back together, but you're put back together as a new person. Mm. You're not the person that you were before you were broken apart, you know, and that really resonated
yes
with me, that it's, you're never going to be the same.
No, I say that to Eric all the time. I'm just like, that person, I will never move through the world as carefree again. That person is gone. Like, I don't even... I remember her, but it's hard to remember what she felt like, mm-hmm, because this is such an all-consuming, different feel.
Yeah.
In most of the time, in the best way.
Yeah.
But being artists, I feel like we are prone to being emotional to begin with and being in touch with those emotions. And I couldn't believe that I could be even more emotional than I was before. Shocking, right?
And different feels, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, well,
this has been incredible.
You guys, thank you so much. I'm so grateful this exists to be able to talk about these things. Yeah. It's really amazing.
I mean, it's so easy to talk to you. So.
Yes, thank you, friend.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer-Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson-Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward-Weber for our super theme song.
Our producer, Dori Berenstein, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you. Have a good one.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.